Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
A look now at the situation in Syria, where violence and casualties have proceeded unabated throughout the weekend, as they have done for nearly 2 years now. The civil war in Syria continues on this second anniversary of the Arab Spring. President Bashar al-Assad continues to lose his grip on power. The question now is, how much longer will he be able to hold on, and at what cost? Joining us now, veteran Middle East correspondent Robin Wright. Her latest article for The Atlantic is called "Assad's Playbook is Now Empty." Welcome back to the show, Robin.
It's great to be with you, John.
What has changed in the last 2 weeks for Bashar al-Assad, do you think?
Well, I think there are a number of things that have demonstrated his power book is empty. Usually a dictator to stay in power needs at least 30% support at home. Obviously doesn't need a majority, but he needs a power base, not only politically, but also to recruit security forces who are willing to put their lives on the line for him. And there's every indication that he is, for the first time, lower than that 30%, which he had culled from minority Christians and Kurds and Alawites, an offshoot of Shiite Islam. But just as important, he's losing support of pivotal allies who have prevented stronger international action, Russia and China particularly. And finally, to stay in power, an autocrat needs to prevent a viable or recognized alternative from developing. And that's something that's also changed in the last 2 weeks. The Syrian opposition has been deeply divided, and that has prevented the kind of international recognition that you saw in Libya. But the Syrians have now moved among the opposition forces to form a new coalition, which was recognized by the United States as well as 100 other countries. So there is beginning to be a sense that there is an alternative emerging, at least for a transition phase.
Describe the people of Syria who have lived under fear now with two Assad regimes, father and son. Has something changed on the ground that has emboldened the people of Syria perhaps to not be so fearful of the consequences of defying the government?
It's a very good question. And what is that psychological tipping point, which is as important as anything else? And I think the ability of the rebels to take large chunks of the country, even when they are not only outmanned and outgunned, but they don't have any means really of fighting the air force, which is a very deadly component. Assad has been willing to use gunships, firing almost arbitrarily into urban areas. He's most recently used Scud missiles, which are a rather imprecise and deadly weapon. And I think there's a sense in Syria today, even among those close to the regime, that Assad can no longer win.
Let's talk about that inner circle for just a moment. Do you think they are, as you've suggested there, and certainly some are, just responding to the grim reality on the ground that there's really a checkmate emerging here for President Assad? But have the opposition and the allies, including the United States, had any success in wrenching some of the inner circle away, either by luring them into exile, causing them to defect, the kinds of things that were effective in the Libyan situation?
There have been some key defections, but I think less because they were enticed or lured by foreign powers. I think there are those who, for a lot of reasons, be it sectarian differences, because they're looking out for their families, because they sense the political realities. The latest defection was the director of public relations for Syria's intelligence service, who announced his defection in a video that was posted online. And he called for other intelligence officers, diplomats, and Syrian officials to join him. Now, I think one of the really interesting turning points is the fact that the Russians have admitted publicly that Assad might not win, and even talked about mobilizing an evacuation of the thousands of Russians who work there, who have married Syrians, or who are deployed in military or assistance or diplomatic positions in Syria. And so all of this comes together, and you have a sense that this prolonged crisis that seems to just drag on and on at a cost of some 40,000 lives so far may be reaching a point that a critical mass could sway the difference. And the only question is, how does it play out? Does it play out under UN auspices where there's some kind of negotiation, which the Syrian opposition has rejected? Or does Assad fight it out literally to the end?
Did the U.S. misjudge here, miscalculate the staying power, the ability of Assad to stick around? Did they think he was going to fold his tent early?
I don't know whether what the estimates are inside the intelligence community. You get, in talking to U.S. officials, lots of different personal estimates of how long they thought he could survive. The real challenge for the U.S. was always figuring out how could you help the opposition without getting into what Colin Powell once called the pottery barn rule. If you get involved, then you bear responsibility for what happens next. And there was always a fear that we could end up with another Iraq, another Afghanistan, a commitment that the United States couldn't afford, whether it was in terms of its image around the world, in terms of the war weariness at home, in terms of the fiscal crisis that the United States faces. So, you know, the challenge was trying to help push this over the edge without bearing responsibility for what follows.
Robin Wright is a senior fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace. She's a veteran Middle East correspondent. Her latest piece for The Atlantic is called Assad's Playbook is Now Empty. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.